What's up, everybody? It's your old friend, John Middlecoff. I'm here to tell you about our friends at Game Time. Here's what I need you to do. Go to your smartphone, download a little app called Game Time. Baseball season's in full swing. Oracle Park. Been there a million times. Never doesn't live up to the hype. Go get yourself some garlic fries, a brewski, maybe some ice cream. They have very good Ghirardelli ice cream there. And when you do that, promo code HAM. So download the Game Time app. Your first pair of tickets, promo code HAM, H-A-M, save $20. The A's, only going to be in the Bay Area for the rest of this season. You probably can basically go for free. Just buy a pair of tickets to any baseball game. They also have comedy shows if you want to check one of those out, or concerts. Game Time app, promo code HAM, save yourself $20. We don't even need a thank you. Just hammer that promo code.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. The promo code is HAM and then the number one. HAM and the numeral one at MyBookie.ag. It's Ease.com and EaseWellness.com with a promo code HAM.
Chris Mullin, absolutely. This is now Chris spoke with us Thursday. This one is courtesy of CanBR 104.5 and 680.
The sports leader.
You know, we saw Steve Kerr talking yesterday. He was pretty fired up to play on Christmas. I think he said, and I know you talked to Glenn Robinson after the game on TV. That was the first that Glenn came up to him before the game and said it's the first time he's ever played on Christmas. How much do you think it meant to those guys?
Well, I think it meant a lot. You know, look, this last 5 years have been incredible. One of the best dynasties we've seen in the history of the NBA. So they've done a lot of winning. And due to injuries, it's a really different type of season for all these guys, the coaches, the owners, everybody, the fans. So it's a big adjustment. So anytime you get put together a nice win like that on Christmas. You know, there's only five games for the whole schedule. Everyone's watching. It's just really satisfying. I thought Steve Kerr and his staff came up with a great game plan. And as important, the play is executed, I thought, to perfection defensively, energized them, and just had a really good energy in the building. So, you know, it was a great win because of the history with these teams the last few seasons in the playoffs. But for this group, I think they really needed just a good energized win, feel good about themselves, and now they're on a three-game winning streak.
You know, one thing they've really been doing, it feels like about the last month, is playing really hard. And, you know, I mean, you've been around the NBA for a long, long time. I mean, if you just play hard, you have a couple decent players, you're going to win some games. And yesterday was they played hard and they making shots and making plays. But just if they keep playing at this level of effort, I mean, could they get to 25 wins? You know, I mean, I know they've won three straight games. It's probably not going to happen too often with the lineup they're rolling out, but they're definitely not going to be a 10-win team, right?
Yeah, John, I think they've played hard with good effort for most of the games. You know, there's been a few clunkers here and there from an NG standpoint. But what I'm impressed with is the young guys who, you know, look, in the beginning, the first, you know, 15 to 20 games, a lot of those guys are playing out of their roles, out of position, and probably playing too many minutes. But they were playing the right way. They weren't just out there jacking shots up. They were sticking to the game plan. They just weren't ready to win ball games at this level. So the last 10 days or so, they've gotten healthy. And definitely the last three or four games, Steve's been able to roll out a starting lineup of veterans, guys that, you know, deserve to be on the floor, have been on the floor before. And in turn, it put the young players back into the roles they should have been from the start of the season, coming off the bench, you know, playing spot minutes. And when the game's on the line, watching the NBA pros watch what it takes to win games. So that's been a short sample size because they've been injured guys, and even D'Angelo, Draymond, all these guys have been in that lineup, you know, very consistently. So it's been hard to get some rhythm and flow to their game. And I thought yesterday their defense really energized them. They started doubling hard in half court. In turn, that makes you communicate and rotate and have a lot of activity on a defensive end. I thought it carried over to the offensive side. You know, they just played a good overall game yesterday. It was fun to watch.
What was it about the way they defended him? You mentioned him a little bit, but the whole James Harden, the one free throw attempt is very uncommon. So what were the things they did that impressed you against him?
Yeah, guy, well, the first thing is to keep him off the line. The guy's averaging almost 38 a game, right? So he's leading the league in scoring, and he makes shots. His efficiency is way up this year. He's shooting like 45 from the field. He's up high 30s from the three. He's a really good free throw shooter. So, you know, you're not going to take his field goal makes away, but you can take his free throws away. And he attempts about 13 a game. To get one is a huge accomplishment because it's easier said than done. The guy's a masterful scorer, but he also knows how to draw fouls because, he can drive the ball, he can hit runners, he bangs threes. So it's easier said than done, but I thought the players did a great job of that alone, not fouling him. And then when they doubled Harden, when he gave the ball up, the next thing is the rotations have to be in sync. That takes communication, takes some IQ, and you know, knowing your personnel. So they didn't overreact. If Harden gave the ball to Westbrook, they closed out short to him and almost dared him to shoot the three. He's shooting 25% from the three. In turn, he went 0-for-8. And Westbrook's a very competitive guy. He takes that personal, but it played into Warriors' hands. So he kept shooting them. And then the other thing, too, is from a game plan standpoint, when you play Houston, there's not a whole lot you need to look at. They're going to have Westbrook and Harden handle the ball exclusively. They're going to have two corner three shooters. They're going to be there no matter what happens. They're going to be staying in the corner. And Clint Capela, or one of the bigs, will be roaming around the baseline trying to get lobs. So in turn, I thought Steve did a good job of taking those players out of their comfort zones. You know, I remember one play, they ran P.J. Tucker off the three. He drove baseline, fell down, and threw a baseline bounce pass through Ben McLemore's leg. That was making them make the basketball plays and not, you know, leaving him open at the strong corner three to shoot a set shot.
Do the Houston Rockets have any chance to go deep in the playoffs with Russell Westbrook gunning like he's gunning?
Well, I don't think it's so much Russell Westbrook. I just don't think that style can win in the playoffs because you see yesterday, Steve approached that game like a playoff game in my mind because he had a specific game plan to take things away and make other players beat. That's what happens in playoff series. So to me, if you're just going to strictly play by analytics, you're actually telling the other team what you're doing each and every time. You know, so it's an easy scout. I don't think they're good enough at other positions. Westbrook and Harden is not the problem. It's everybody else because you can put them in positions that they're not used to or not good at playing at. You know, you make the spot shooters, ball handlers and drivers. You know, you try and take Westbrook away and Harden as much as you can, and you make those other guys beat you. And I think, you know, there's just too many good teams to play that style consistently in the playoffs.
Who do you think, and maybe the answer's obvious, I mean, you start thinking about just the great players that you played with and against, but who was the toughest guy for you to guard and not foul?
Jeez. Well, I appreciate that you're even assuming I play defense.
maybe it wasn't hard if you fouled nobody. I mean, the guys who commit no fouls usually don't defend.
Yeah. You know what? I would say this. You know, in the 80s and 90s, and the way, even like when in college, when I was taught to play, drawing fouls was a big part of offense. You know, it was always very important who got to the line more. And also trying to get one of the better players in foul trouble so he'd play a few less minutes. You know, that was a focal point. Not anymore because not many guys go in the post as much. So you're drawing fouls with head fakes, maybe drawing fouls at the three-point line. But I thought yesterday, you know, everyone's into analytics now. The Rockets took 100 field goals yesterday, right? They shot 51 from three. They made 16, which is a decent number, but they were 16 for 51. And the Warriors only made 9, but they went to the free throw line and they shot about 90%. So to me, there's still a place in basketball for good two-point shots. I think getting to the free throw line is really important. And then the three-point line, I love three-point shots, but I love high-quality three-point shots. So to me, how they're being created is probably more important than how many you get up. So I just think the way Steve Kerr coaches and the way he plays, look, this is a tough season, but I think he's laying the groundwork moving forward, again, trying to see who can play this style of basketball, not just throwing guys out there. So we've seen a lot of good individual development, and I just think now that they're healthy – you'll start them to win some games because, you know, the veterans will be the ones starting the game and ending the game, and the younger players will be in the middle there just filling their roles.
I think you're a unique guy to ask this question just because you've been coaching college the last several years. It looks the Warriors are going to have a relatively high pick unless they keep winning at this rate. You've scouted all these freshmen throughout the country, or at least seen them live at different showcases. Did you have a favorite one that you wanted to come to your school, or just a guy, even if you knew you couldn't get, that you liked the most?
Yeah, I recruit a lot of these kids. It's funny you say that because I've watched them like the last three summers. You know, so I've seen a lot of these kids coming through their, you know, summers of their freshman, sophomore years. One thing that's amazing how quickly they develop. So, you know, not that it's a secret, but they're so young. So when you get a young player, he's just not ready, right? So these kids coming in, like Jordan Poole with the Warriors, it's no indictment on him. He's just not ready to play at this level yet. He just needs some strength and things like that. You know, the one kid that's really intrigued, I guess physically, is Wiseman, because he's so tall and long. He can run. I think he'll develop those other skills, shooting and things like that. But he runs like a deer. I think there's a place from not, I mean, I don't think he'll turn the franchise around, but if you put him on a decent team, he's going to be able to, you know, run and dunk and play in the dunk and do some good
things. But he's not Shaq or Kobe, or I mean, like Anthony Davis coming out.
No, I don't see that at all. Well, put it this way, when it drafts at this time of the draft, if you're not talking about a guy that you know is number one, it's going to be, you know, who you like better. I think there's more guards and wings. And then I think there'll be some guys that no one knows about now. There's a few players that are freshmen that I didn't think would be ready, but as I'm watching college games now, they may be the ones to take to develop, right? Because, you know, now everything's on potential. You know, we've seen the Warriors got Pascal at 41. They were picking him to play with, you know, a more veteran team, right? But now that winds up being a really good pick. So I think some of these younger kids. There's a kid in Memphis. There's a kid in Florida that I watched, you know, New York kids, two young kids, really gifted athletes. I don't think they're ready, but as I'm watching this draft, they might be moving up, you know, later in the season. But we'll see.
Chris Mullin, our guest here on Tolbert, Kruger, and Brooks, Guy Haberman, John Middlecoff in on KNBR and KNBR FM, the sports leader. You know, the interesting thing, too, I wonder, like you mentioned James Wiseman, who played three games and has left school. So he's not, no one's going to watch him play college ball. Like, I think back to last year, so much of what Zion did was he played college basketball. Everyone got to see him. LaMelo Ball went to Australia.
Dominated college basketball.
Zion, yeah. Yeah. LaMelo goes to Australia. He gets hurt at a time when GMs hadn't gone to see him yet. He's out a month. Their season ends, like, soon. So no one's really sure if anyone's going to get to see him play. And I just wonder, as this kind of goes on, if we're going to have if we're going to see more and more and more GMs drafting players that they just don't get to see that much. And even though they're not directly drafting high school guys, it kind of feels to them like they are.
Yeah. So, you know, that's been the change over the last, say, 30 years. You know, you think about like around Christmas time, Ralph Sampson came out, right, to light that big Christmas tree at the Chase Center, right? So Ralph was a, I don't know, four-time player of the year in college. And he stayed in college 4 years. Patrick Ewing, all these, Michael stayed 3 years, Michael Jordan. So by the time they, you know, 3 years of college, you get 30, you know, say 60, 70, 90 games to watch. The GMs don't need anymore. They've got the book on the guy. They got the scout report. They know about his practice habits, all those things. That becomes more important, as important as the guy, because you can see a guy with talent, right? His size, his wingspan, all that stuff you can see. The part that becomes the things that you don't know is a guy's competitive spirit, you know, how he interacts with his teammates. And usually you watch that in the team dynamic. So a guy like Wiseman, I don't think it's going to hurt his draft stock because we've seen players like Kyrie and other guys not play in college. They'll get to see his private workouts. When you're talking about when you bunch up wings and guards, guys with the same talent, what's going to separate them are those intangibles. And it's hard to tell from a private workout or an interview that's kind of pre-scripted and the kids have their answers kind of laid out from by their agents. So that's why the draft gets tricky. You know, so information is the most important part. And like you said, as they come to us younger with less games under their belt and less just game situations that you can watch, it becomes more of a crapshoot.
Last week, I was bored flipping around the channels, and I ended up on a Georgia-SMU game. And I watched the whole second half, and they went to overtime. And that kid, Anthony Edwards, I think is his name, and they have another point guard. I think there was like a top 50 recruit, too. And he hit the game tying at the end of regulation to send him in overtime. Then he basically hit the game-winning shot. And I noticed Edwards twice, went over to him and celebrated like he hit it, putting on my, you know, right. I know you're a former GM, right. putting on the scout hat. I was like, wow, that's type of stuff that stands out. Clearly, he's really talented, but it was like, he seems like a pretty good guy. I don't know much about him besides he's got a lot of hype, but he seemed like kind of like Zion last year. It was clear he got a lot of joy when his teammates hit shots. That's why I think everyone fell in love. He's a freak, but the intangibles were off the charts.
That's a good point, John. And so like when GMs and scouts go watch games, of course they're watching the action.
You like that guy?
They keep it. I do like him. Yes, I do a lot. Yes, I watched him. Very talented, like you said. So, and if you're at the game, I'm sure scouts. I was going to say scouts and GMs. They watch timeouts. If the guy's subbed out, how he's walking to the bench, how he interacts with his coach, and as you mentioned, how he interacts with his teammates. All those things are important because. You're going to, you know, when you get to the NBA, a lot of these kids are going to go to losing situations. The higher you get drafted, more than likely you're going to a losing situation. And you brought up Zion. We played against Duke 2 years when I was back coaching college. And I thought the most impressive thing about him, again, his athleticism, everybody could see it, right? He was dominant, his quickness, his incredible explosion. But the joy that he played with and the joy that, you know, he gave to his teammates, to me, was what set him apart. And you know, that's what brings teams together. That's what, you know, in the middle of the season or you're having a tough season, that's what can keep a team together or tear it apart.
But Chris, isn't this part of what makes the Warriors situation so unique? On one hand, that's really important when you go to a bad situation. But what about when you're a blue chip prospect who's been in college for a year, you get drafted, and you don't go to a bad situation where everyone's just waiting for you to develop into a 20-10 guy. You go to the Warriors where they've got their 20-10 guys. And now you have to kind of fit in when you've always been the star of the show. I got to think that's going to make for a unique dynamic for whoever the Warriors draft. Kind of what we're talking about here might really, really matter to them, just given all that.
Well, I think whoever that player is, right, whether, you know, as of now, you know, who knows what transpires. But as of now, they're looking at a top five pick. So whoever that player might be, he's going to be blessed to be walking into this franchise because, like you said, usually that top five pick is going to go to a losing situation, be counted on to play 30 minutes, and he's going to be the savior and all these things that happen to these young kids, right? This guy's going to be walking into a locker room with Hall of Fame players, guys who have championship rings, and can be around them, watch their daily habits, and come along slowly, and from day one be taught what it is to be an NBA, not only an NBA player, an NBA superstar. So that's going to be a blessing for that player. And then for the Warriors, again, they're going to be able to make a relatively quick jump because they're going to have two of the best Hall of Fame players of all time, Steph and Klay, coming back with Draymond. Some of these players now that they're developing, you know, slowly and surely, they can become role players, and their new top five pick can plug in and play his role, not come in and be a savior, but come in and play to his strengths, work on his weaknesses in practice in the off season, and have a smooth development into the NBA.
You know, I don't know if you saw that trailer came out, like a minute trailer on the Jordan doc, that, you know, the 10-part yeah. series that's coming out on ESPN, and one of my yeah. favorite parts of the yeah. Dream Team doc, I think, is when you're describing Larry with the bad back screaming at Magic, you don't got it anymore. You're a pretty unique guy to ask this. You've been his teammate. You obviously played against him. You guys played against each other in college. Was it hard to not, especially once he established his dominance, not to be in? Were you ever intimidated by Mike when you were playing against him?
Yeah, so Michael and Patrick and I, we all came out of high school together. So the first time I met those guys was
pretty strong trio.
Yeah, McDonald's All-American game. So, not only a long time ago, we were coming out of high school. And I remember going, we were in Wichita, Kansas, and we're going to, like, you know, kind of a shoot-around, but it was early in the morning, and everyone's kind of like, you know, what's going on? We had to get up in the morning. It was kind of – but Michael was out there running around like a deer and dunking. I'm like, this is insane, dude. Like, this guy, how can he do this so early in the morning? And from then on – you know, like you mentioned, through college, we played Carolina a few times when I was at St. John's. We played the 84 Olympics together. That was the first time he really, really stuck out. Because that summer, before we went to L.A. to play the Olympic Games, we played eight exhibition games against NBA team, NBA select players. And they were getting the best player. They weren't getting the middle-of-the-line guys. Like, we played a game in Indiana at the Hoosier Dome, which was called at the time. Magic, Larry Bird, Isaiah Thomas, Ralph Sampson, all the top players played. And at that time, already, Micah was the best player on the floor. So he set himself apart early. And I always say he had the unique combination. Again, when we talk about, obviously, an incredible athlete. But he had he was a very fundamentally sound player. I used to tell young guys all the time, when you watch Michael Jordan's highlights, and they're breathtaking, no doubt, his dunks and his alley-oops and all that nasty stuff he did. But how he got to those plays a lot were very fundamental basketball. You'll see him denying the lanes, making a good defensive play. You know, very fundamentally sound player, but just made it look so spectacular because of his incredible gifts, his athletic abilities. But I always felt like he was one of the most fundamentally sound players I ever played with, passing, shooting, all the basic skills with incredible athleticism and competitiveness off the charts.
Did he call fouls in practice?
No, nobody did.
Yeah.
Nobody did. Yeah. You know, when you're in a gym with guys like that, and not that you're not playing defense or competing, but the ball movement, the body, it's so quick and crisp and flawless that, you know, you're basically moving the ball, shooting to take out of bounds. It's just a constant flow of almost like a beautiful, you know, concert. It just keeps moving.
Could you guys hang in 84 against the older guys?
With who now?
With, like, when you guys played Magic and Larry and those guys, when it was like you, Patrick, and the select team?
Oh, yeah, we went 8-0.
Oh, my God. You did not lose.
And it... No, we played. Listen, look, and they might. Who knows? They might be on real tape. You know, they might be somewhere stored. And, you know,
was that the team that Bobby Knight kicked off Charles Barkley, or didn't select him
for the tryouts? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was 84. Yeah. So Charles, John Stockton, and Karl Malone were all cut from that team.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty. Yeah, that was a wild summer, to say the least. But memorable, and like I said, I'll tell you what, one of the most underrated Olympic teams, I think, you know, just a little biased because I was on it, but the last amateur Olympic team to win a gold medal.
Makes sense why. If you're cutting John Stockton and Karl Malone and Charles, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but they got back. They came back to the dream team. Yeah, they got redemption.
Yeah, they did.
Molly, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
Your time.
Appreciate it.
My pleasure, fellas. Have a good afternoon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.